This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Equity Minds.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates. Our aim is to help you on your investing journey, break down the barriers from beginning to dividend, whether you're an absolute beginner or Warren Buffett. We guarantee Equity Mates will have something for you. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my Equity Mate, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Excited for this episode. This is a bit of a walk down memory lane for you this week. We talk about long-term investing a lot on the podcast, and we're talking to someone who's been involved with your very first investment.
Yes, he doesn't know it, but he's been on my journey for the last... Well, we'll talk about it in a second. It is our pleasure to welcome Tom Milner from Contact Asset Management. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, well, thanks, gents. Thanks for having me.
So for those who are unaware, Tom is a director and portfolio manager at Contact Asset Management. He has 17 years experience in markets, was the chief executive officer of Brickworks Investment Company. And for those who have been on the journey, no, that was my very first investment back in 2003.
Was the IPO? Beyond the years.
Tom was there from 2008 to 2016. In that time, he grew assets under management from 440 million to a billion. As well as his work at Contact, Tom is also a director of Washington H. Soul Pattinson and New Hope Corporation. So, Tom, vast experience in the markets. Very much looking forward to unpacking what has been my first investment.
Yeah, so am I.
So before we get into that, we do like to start with a bit of a game, just to throw a few themes and indexes out there that may not otherwise touch on.
Yep.
We call it overrated or underrated. You up for playing?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, well, we'll start at home with our benchmark index, ASX 200. Overrated or underrated?
Given the recent reporting season we've had, probably underrated.
Okay. Why is that?
I think share prices ran pretty hard over the last 12 months, as we all know. Valuations seem stretched, but the reporting season we've just seen this February, the earnings gap has narrowed. They were pretty good results, and the outlook for the good quality companies is still pretty good.
Mm. Overrated or underrated, the NASDAQ 100?
Oh, so overrated. that's completely... That's at the
You're
other end of the scale.
You're going to have to elaborate on that one.
As soon as you start talking revenue multiples, you know, future revenue multiples, buying revenue, we don't really understand that in our process. Mm-hmm. So, NASDAQ overrated.
Mm-hmm. An asset class that is close to every Australian's heart, overrated or underrated? Australian property
depends what you're doing. If you're nice. If you're a holder of a house, it's probably okay.
Yeah.
If you're looking, it's definitely overrated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to close it out, another asset class that is hotly spoken about at the moment, overrated, underrated, Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh. Overrated.
No comment.
I'll be honest, I don't understand that as well as I probably should. And I think if you asked most people in the street if they actually understood it as well, they'd probably give you the same answer. So
if you asked most Bitcoin investors, they'd probably give you the same answer. That's probably true. Well,
I was listening to, I don't know if you've heard of Clubhouse. There's the app over in the States, and I just jumped onto that last night to listen to a few people chat about crypto and whatnot, and I just felt so behind the eight ball that I was just like, it's almost not worth trying to get up to speed on, because the stuff that they were talking about was... Anyway, we're not here to talk about crypto.
No, that's a whole episode in and of itself.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
So Tom, we do want to get to what you're doing at BKI and Contact and all of that. But before we do, we want to get to know you a little bit. And we like to start with hearing about your first investment.
Sure.
We find there's sometimes a good story or some good lessons that come out of it. So to kick us off today, can you tell us the story of your first investment?
Yeah, sure. It's a bit like Bryce's story, I think. It's probably a little bit boring.
Hey.
The fact that it was bought for me, which I was fortunate enough, but it was obviously a Washington H. Soul Pattinson share. So obviously a very long-dated family history there. So that was my first share. Still own it, obviously. Probably will never sell it. I dare say it'll be probably passed to my kids and grandkids. So it's a very long-term, stable investment. That was my first investment.
For people who aren't familiar with Washington H. Soul Pattinson and your family's connection to it, do you want to just explain that?
Yeah, sure. So 140 years ago, my great-great-grandfather, Louis Pattinson, started a chemist chain, Pattinson & Co., and then he teamed up with a mate of his and started the company Washington H. Soul Pattinson, and they listed that in 1903. And since then, they've obviously had chemist chains, but then as the, I suppose, business developed and things started to get probably a little bit difficult in retail and chemists, they diversified. My great-uncle, Jim Milner, he broadened the business quite substantially. They did a cross-shareholding ownership with Brickworks Limited, which is the owner of Austral Bricks in the mid-60s. And then from there, that was literally their probably first investment outside of the chemist chain. And from there, they went into mining and resources, telecommunications through TPG, which is now merged with Vodafone, and various other things within, you know, agriculture, financials, etc. So I think the market cap of Souls today is about $7 billion. It's never missed paying a dividend since listing in 1903. Some of the returns of the portfolio are probably best in the world on a per annum basis. It's an amazing story, and something I'm really proud to be a part of, obviously.
Yeah, it's an underrated company in Australia, because, you know, we often talk about, you know, reinvesting profits, finding ways to grow the business, and like that's the story of Washington H. Soul Pat. It's like started with a chemist and now it's this diversified financials company that just keeps reinvesting.
Mm. Yeah. And it's hard to explain, because even the Soul Pat's chemist chain is dwindling somewhat, but people are being aware of the Priceline chain of pharmacists. So that is part of the API group, and Soul still own a 20-odd% stake in API.
Mm, mm. Tom, are you able to give us a bit of insight into your own sort of personal investing philosophy?
Yeah, it's pretty sensible. I only own...
Everyone says that.
Yeah, I know. I probably mean it, because I've only got sort of, I think, 7 or 8 holdings.
Wow, okay.
I don't hold this big, huge, elaborate portfolio of 100 shares, and if they don't work, I put them in the bottom drawer. And I do that for a living. I manage other people's money with my business partner, Will Colbert, at Contact, and with my father at Souls. But it's backing myself. So I own BKI shares, I own Souls shares, I own Brickworks shares, I own New Hope shares. I own money in the funds that we manage, and that's literally it.
Mm.
You know, I don't want to go out and then buy BHP or Transurban or an ARB, which I would dare say we'll talk about later. But, you know, I own them through a BKI or through a Souls portfolio or through the managed funds that we run. So I don't need to then go and duplicate that. The hassle of doing that twice a year, of getting your dividend statements and all that sort of thing in, it's just I get 6 slips each half, and it's quite easy.
Well, we say look for managers and look for like executives that have skin in the game. It sounds like you definitely have skin in your own game.
I think that's something that Dad's instilled in us as well, and Jim did with him, and you know, Louis Pattinson way back in the day, you know, his name was on the front door, And, you know, you back yourself. If you're not prepared to back yourself, you're not going to go out and raise money and manage other people's money. So, you know, it's a thing that we take quite seriously. And through alignment, when we look at companies, that's one of the big things we look at.
Mm-hmm. So let's move to Brickworks and Contact Asset Management. It was my first investment back in 2003. So the story of Contact starts with Brickworks.
Yeah, so the BKI Brickworks story is a very similar one to Soul. So Brickworks as well, when they merged with Soul Patts, started to invest in equities themselves. So when they had a really good year and they sold a lot of building product, they'd buy bank shares, they'd get the dividends, they'd get the franking credits. So when Brickworks acquired Bristol Roof Company in 2003, they needed to raise some money and they had this portfolio. And they thought, well, rather than liquidate it, why don't we create an LIC? So it was called Brickworks Investment Company in 2003, and we raised $172 million, I think, from memory. And then over the years, I got a bit sick of taking calls for brick orders and all that sort of thing, so we changed the name to BKI, which was the ticker code of the stock. So that's how it sort of developed.
And what's the, for those that are unaware, what's the sort of mandate for BKI?
There's not a true mandate in the sense that we can own any stock in the market, and we're pretty, you know, broad about the investment holdings in the portfolio from a market cap point of view. But what we've found is we've got 19,000 shareholders. Most of them are in pension mode. Most of them are self-managed super funds, or a bit like you, Bryce, most of them are in accumulation phase. So we've got to try and have a portfolio that's a high yielding portfolio, but then does also add a little bit of growth. So that the mandate is first and foremost, let's try and give our shareholders about a 5% yield if we can through the cycle. And we might hold stocks that yield 7, 8, 9%, and we might own stocks that only yield 1, 2, 3%, but they've got a growing dividend. So that's the mandate. The mandate is GFC, COVID, whatever. We might have to adjust the dividend, but at least we're going to pay one. And in the good times, we'll accumulate franking credits and we'll pay out specials to sort of flatten the curve, and which we have done. I think we've paid 8 or 9 special dividends since listing.
So between 2008 and 2016, you were the CEO at BKI. You more than doubled assets under management. And I guess you started at a pretty inauspicious time with the GFC. What was the journey like at BKI, and what were some of the lessons you learned during that time?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's important to go back into those sort of periods sometimes, especially in the environment that we're at now. But when we listed BKI, Soul's Funds Management, which was a small mid-cap fund that Soul's had an interest in, they were the managers of BKI for 5 years. And through that experience, I learned a lot from guys like Frank Volandi and Paul Biddle in particular. And then after the 5 years, when that mandate finished, I was invited by the board to come in and become CEO of BKI, which I thought was great. I was only 30. I was CEO of a $400 million market cap.
Jeez, CEO of 30, what are we doing?
I know. The more we do these podcasts and the older we get, the more I'm just like, God.
But you haven't sold your BKI shares, Bryce. So
that's true.
You're winning.
I don't know if that, we'll see.
So then, you know, that was all great, but the GFC was happening and it was pretty ordinary. You know, it was... you know, the Dow Jones was down 600-700 points a night for weeks on end. Our market followed. Capital raisings left, right and centre. One of the biggest things I did learn during that period, Alec, was Dad always says, make sure you have some cash. You know, make sure you have some cash on the sidelines, because if you find a moment like the GFC, you don't want to be selling NAB to buy CBA. Yeah. You don't want to be selling Woolies to buy Wesfarmers back then. You want to have some cash so you can own both of them and buy them when everyone else is selling. And, you know, all those raisings that they did, they were huge discounts, massive. And we still own most of those stocks today.
So just on that, you know, Alec and I also try and maintain a bit of a cash position, because I was in year 12 or 11 when the GFC hit and remember thinking, God damn, I wish I had 10 grand to throw into anything right now. And so since then, I've said to myself, you know, always have a bit of cash. Yep. What's your strategy in terms of knowing how much cash to kind of sit aside? And, you know, is it grow that continuously, or is it just allocate 10%, you know, for our audience who are also trying to do this strategy?
That's a great question. And I think very topical at the moment. if you can get, like back then, we were getting 5, 6, 7% interest. So holding cash actually wasn't such a bad option anyway. So that was probably a bit easier. In today's environment, when you're not getting much interest, if any interest at all post-tax, it's really hard to have 10, 15, 20% of your wealth in cash. So at the moment for BKI, for example, for our funds at Contact, we're at about between probably 5 and 7% cash. It's enough to deploy if we have to in probably one or two positions, but it's not enough if the market fell 30% to really have a crack and buy most of the stocks in the portfolio and really take advantage of it. But by holding 10 or 15% cash in this environment, last year, you know, you've missed 20%+ growth. You're getting nothing in interest. So it's a bit of a game of what's a better opportunity.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, however much cash you had on the sidelines, you'd wish you had more during like the GFC or in March 2020.
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting here 12 months ago from where it just about turned.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're right, you know, you could have had 30, 40% cash, but you probably wouldn't have pulled the trigger until a month's time, right?
Yeah.
The thing that we were lamenting was just how quickly it turned. We thought we had more time and it was just, and it's up again, yeah.
Yeah, we took the same view.
Yeah. So let's get back to your story. So you were CEO of BKI until 2016 and then you started Contact with your partner, Will Colbert. What was the decision to transition from BKI to managing BKI under Contact?
Yeah, sure. So Will joined BKI 3 years prior to the decision to start Contact. And just for your listeners, it's a pretty cool story as well. We talk about our family a lot, but you know, Will and our family have got a very similar story and hence the name Contact. Will's great-grandfather was a really famous horse trainer, Danny Lewis. My great-grandfather, on the other side of the family, Max Claverin, was an accountant who loved racehorses. They became good mates. Danny Lewis is Will's great-grandfather, as I said, and Max is mine. And they had this horse called Contact. And it was a long-distance runner, so it wasn't a sprinter. So it typified sort of what we're doing. It won the 1936 Sydney Cup and ran second in the 35 Melbourne Cup. You know, it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, that is.
So that's the name. If people are wondering why we call it Contact, it's a pretty random name. You can't Google search it because every single website comes up Contact. Yeah. But it's a marketing nightmare in that sense. But we were working together and we thought, this is great. We've built this thing now to about $1 billion. It's a really good LIC. MER is minuscule. It's about 16 bips. But we were pretty ambitious.
Hold on. We're just gonna interrupt you to get some jargon explained there. MER and BIPs.
Management expense ratio. Yeah. What it costs a shareholder or a investor to run the portfolio. Most funds are anywhere between 0.5% up to 2%. So we run BKI at 0.1%. So 10 basis points only. So it's very, very low. We haven't actually seen another managed fund run as you know, cheaply as that.
And that, so 0.1% management fee and from memory, no performance fee?
No performance
fee.
Yeah. So what we had to do when we started the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
So when we started the business Contact, we felt compelled to take our salary equivalent as a management fee and take that across. You know, there's no good charging 40 basis points if you're only, you know, equivalently charging 10 through your salary, so that was it. That was important to us. So we went to the board and pitched this idea of we'd like to start a funds management business. You know, obviously very happy to continue to run BKI as it is, and it's important to also break that down. Is whilst we're the portfolio manager, all the investment decisions are done by the investment committee at BKI. So, you know, there is a secondary filter before actual investment is made and implemented at the BKI level. So we went to them and they agreed, and you know, we started Contact. We only had the one client for a long time, which was fine. But what we thought is, as we build Contact and put more analysts on and more resources, the BKI shareholder should benefit from that, because it was very hard. If we went from an MER of 16 to 20, And all the bigger guys, AFIC, Argo, Milton, the grandfathers of the LIC industry who have been around for, 90 years, some of them, they're all charging between sort of 15 and 18, 15 and 16 even. You know, we couldn't then just go outside the circle and do that. So that's why we went that way. But and then from there, we ended up managing the Soul's large cap portfolio. So you remember the Brickworks portfolio I was talking about before? Mm. Soul's obviously had their own in-house portfolio. It's about a $350 million Australian equity portfolio. We manage that. Same sort of mandate as BKI, yield, capital preservation. Those dividends go back to the main Washington H. Soul Pattinson business to help them pay their dividends to shareholders each half as well.
Mm. We will just take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So, Tom, you just mentioned there the large cap fund at Souls. So let's kind of move to that. And you've explained the relationship. So it's a large cap, what, 350? What's your investment process for that, or the filter that you kind of take for that sort of process?
So it's the same as BKI. So we've got that five-step process that we talk about at BKI. Principal activity, balance sheet, management, and then valuation. We can talk through that if you like.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think so. I think people love hearing how experts analyze stocks. Yep. So let's get into that. Yeah. So number one, principal activity. If we start there, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but like, what are you looking for with that one?
Yeah, so principal activity is basically understanding the business. So we had a bit of a joke about Bitcoin before, but if there was a business attached to Bitcoin and we didn't understand it, there's no way we should be investing in that. Whereas if it's an ARB or a Reece or a CBA or a BHP, we understand their principal activity and their business model, and that sort of goes then to the next step that we're happy to invest in that company.
Yeah. So then you understand the business. Next one is income.
Income.
So what are you looking for there?
So I think we get a bit mistaken about, it must be 5% yield, must be 7% yield. That's not necessarily the case. Income for us is, if a company has the ability to pay out a dividend, it might only be a yield of 1%, but if they've got the ability to pay out a dividend, a lot of things have worked for them. You know, they've been successful. We're not talking about revenue multiples anymore. Sure, they get revenue, but it's growing, obviously. They've got a lot of expenses that they've paid. They've paid staff. They've acquired a business, or they've grown, or they've spent money on R&D. It's generating cash still. They might have some debt, but they're paying interest. And then all of a sudden, they've got profits and excess capital that they can return to shareholders. So it just it sort of proves up the business model for us, as opposed to saying, let's run a filter, anything under 4% we won't invest in.
Yeah, right.
So it's not a threshold. It's more just binary. Are they paying anything?
Or do they have the prospect of paying one in the near future?
Yeah.
And further to that, if a company cuts a dividend, that's a bit of a red flag to us.
Yeah, right.
Something's actually really gone wrong in the business that says, okay, we're not generating enough profits from our core business to pay a dividend.
I got to ask, Soul Patts has been listed for, 117 years? Have they ever cut their dividend?
Have they ever cut? That's a great, not in the last 20-odd years. Okay. And they're the only stock in the whole market that hasn't.
Wow.
Ramsay Healthcare was the other one, but they obviously have cut their dividend recently, but the only stock in the whole market that haven't cut their dividend over the last 20 years.
Wow.
But they have paid dividends every year.
There you go.
Incredible stat.
So you principal activity, you understand the company. Income, it does pay a dividend, or it has the capacity to pay a dividend. Third one is financial strength.
Yes. So we talked about the GFC before. We're talking about COVID. If a balance sheet is stretched in a cycle, in a cyclical environment, the first thing to go is the dividend. And then once the dividend gets cut, all sorts of stuff happens. You know, they raise money, they dilute shareholders. Management might leave because it's, you know, it's not the business they thought it was. They're not going to hit their EPS targets, et cetera, et cetera. So it does start a bit of a tsunami if you get the balance sheet wrong. We don't mind debt as long as it's serviceable and easily addressed if it needs to be.
I know at the start of 2020, Bryce and I were talking about, you know, like, oh, sorry, not at the start, like when COVID was really kicking off, it was sort of like, look for companies that have the ability to survive this time, like with a strong balance sheet, and then thrive afterwards. And, you know, that's all good and well for us to say, but I guess it's a lot harder to actually like understand what you should be looking for when you're looking at a balance sheet. So like, what are some of the key metrics you're looking at, or what are some of the key, I guess, indicators you're looking at that indicate financial strength?
Yeah, there's a lot of ratios, and we could go into that, but it's probably not worth going down that rabbit hole, to be honest. But you know, debt coverage, whatever ratio you look at, it must be sustainable, and it depends what industry you're in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, the gearing ratios may be, you know, 90% for one industry, but they might only be sort of 30%. You know, you might feel comfortable at 30% at another industry, because if you look at a resource company, you know, the profits of a resource company are sort of driven by two things: the commodity price and the currency. And if those two go against you, and your gearing's 30%, but you think it's comfortable, but your revenue falls to pieces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your gearing jumps up. Your balance sheet's a bit stretched. Your market cap falls.
Yeah.
And you run into all sorts of trouble. So it's a bit hard to put a blanket rule on that. And that's sort of another reason that, you know, people should give money to the professionals to manage.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is more and more that we do this. You do see that like, everyone's looking for the shortcut, like indicator, like valuation, price to earnings. But like, you see how that's not good enough, you know. And then like, in same with like balance sheet stuff, there are indicate like ratios and stuff. But more and more, it's like you just have to do the hard work of doing.
Yeah, and another stock in that example is Transurban, or even a Sydney Airport or APA. You know, an infrastructure stock has, you know, on the surface a terrible looking balance sheet, but it's so long dated, it's all fixed, and their business model usually is so consistent that they can service that debt.
Yet
if you went to a retailer and looked at their balance sheet and it was 90% gearing,
see you later.
Literally, see you later.
You're out of business.
Yeah. So let's get back to these five steps. Principal activity, income, financial strength. Fourth one is management.
And this is key. This is one thing that we have really learned over the last nearly 20 years is a good manager will make a good business great. A bad manager will make a great business quite ordinary over his or her tenure, right? Yeah. How do you pick a good manager? Well, obviously you've got to meet them. And the last 12 months has been really difficult to do that. But we always meet management. We always go and see their facilities or their distribution center or their factory or wherever they are. But the big thing is, how much equity do they own in the company that they are running? If they've got true alignment, they own 5, 6, 10, 15, 30% of the business. The really good managers are usually the founders.
Yeah.
Founder-led businesses are something that we really, really like looking for. Again, the name's on the door. They've got all their wealth tied up in the business. You know that they're going to get out of bed every morning and work for you as a shareholder.
What about for the big Australian companies though, like the Woolworths, the CBAs? Like, they're obviously not going to have their entire wealth tied up in this. So how do you treat that sort of dynamic?
No, but if you see a CEO at the big bank and he's got $10 or $15 million worth of stock, that probably gets you out of bed. It's probably enough. What are their incentives? What's that structure look like? How long is it, you know, going to go for? It's a bit different at the top end. I understand that, but you know, again, they're still aligned.
Yeah. Although Brad Banducci apparently is trying to put his name on every Woolworths store.
Is he?
No. I didn't make that up. So management for us is an interesting one, because you know, the majority of the Equity Mates audience are retail investors, and a lot of fund managers we speak to talk about going and meeting management, and for retail investors, that's just something that we can't do. So outside of that, what are some of the key things that you're looking at that you help, you know, assess management?
Well, I think culture of a business stems from management or good management. So even if you go to Coles or Woolies and you're there doing the groceries, just take a step back. Just observe someone who's packing the shelves and have a chat to them and, you know, see if they're engaged in the business. If you go, if you're, you know, fortunate enough to go to a town which is a mining community, just have a look at, you know, what's written on their shirt, which mine they come from, how their behaviour is. You know, it's not just the management at the top tier. It's management at differing levels of a business, which obviously flows through to the entire workforce. So any retailer, you can go in and you get a good sense of if that person on the front register is up to the task of, yes, this is, I'm working for a corporation, but I actually enjoy it and I'm passionate about it.
Yeah. That just always makes me think of Bunnings. Like, undisputed. Yeah, well, I think
that's
best,
a great example.
Best retailer, yep, in Australia. But you go into every store and it's like people are helpful and like you enjoy going there. Yeah.
Harvey Norman's no different. JB Hi-Fi, they're all, you know, they're very similar of being very acceptable to the customer. They understand that the customer's king.
Mm. Mm.
And, you know, without customers, you don't have a business.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So we've covered principal activity, income, financial strength, management. Now we get to the fifth one where I guess you really make the money, which is valuation. Mm. So how do you think about valuation?
We can be very patient. I think that's the thing that we have within the Soles Group. We can be very patient. So for years we looked at ARB and the GFC finally hit and the stock was $2.45, $2.50 and we were buying it. We thought this has fallen way below our valuation. It was probably $4 or $5 before that. It came down and we were buying it when no one else wanted it. And that was a really good example for me to see, okay, we like a business, but if it is stretched, if the valuations are stretched, you don't have to pay for it. You can wait.
Mm.
But if you do all the work first and then you do get a bit of a blip in the market, happy to own it.
So this is where the tricky part comes in. If you don't want to have too much cash on the sidelines, because there's no point having cash given the cash environment, but valuations become so stretched and you want to remain patient and not go into the market, what do you do?
you look a bit further out than FY21.
Right.
So you look at 22, 23, 24, and in all our models we do a 5-year assumption. So ARB, not long ago, we're picking on ARB a little bit here, I'm sorry, but it's a stock that's done very, very well. Mm. Choose anything, but ARB, it was on 40 times PE multiple not long ago. Share price went through $40 and it was probably difficult to own if you hadn't already owned it. But if you'd fast-tracked 2 or 3 years and assumed that their US acquisitions and revenues that they were going to get out of the US business with their JV with Ford was going to work, you know, the valuations came down quite significantly. You're talking sort of 24, 25 times again. So again, if you are a genuine long-term investor, you can look out and have a view that I think this will be worth significantly more in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's the truism that Amazon's always traded at a 60 PE or more?
Correct.
Like, it's always been expensive.
Ramsey Healthcare, we bought when the market cap was lower than $400 million.
Mm. Mm.
So, Tom, just before we move on to the X50 fund, for those who are looking to get access to the work that you're doing at Soles, is that just through the Sol ASX, SOL? Is that how retail investors, or that's...
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So that's an internal mandate. So okay. that portfolio would be part of, or is part of, the broader group. So that's an investment similar to, but very much smaller than New Hope, Brickworks, TPG, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if you're buying a Soles share,
yep,
you're buying all that.
Yep.
I think if you're buying a BKI share, you're just buying the portfolio.
Yeah, yeah. So the ticker for Soles, for those who are unaware, is ASX SOL. Now, Tom, you have just launched the ASX X50 fund, which is investing in Australian companies outside the largest 50 companies in Australia. Why pursue that sort of strategy?
Yeah, we took the view that at both BKI and Soles, we had a lot of large caps. So we've got a 15% portfolio weight in CBA at Soles, at the Soles portfolio, for example. We own about 8% of CBA in BKI. In both portfolios, we also own big licks of BHP, NAB, Rio, Wesfarmers, Woolworths, you know, the typical stocks that the mum and dads would probably own. But we do have a bit of a tail in those both portfolios of your Reese's, your ARBs, your Ramsay Healthcares, your Goodman Groups, those sort of companies that have done really, really well for us. And we thought it would complement that quite nicely. It ties into our process a lot better. You know, a lot of those are founder-led businesses, which we really enjoy obviously investing in. And the X50 index itself has outperformed most indexes over the last 10, 15 years by a considerable way. The trouble we have with that index, though, is there's a lot of stuff like a Zip or an Afterpay, a lot of the IT stuff that we don't understand doesn't sort of make our filter, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think the valuation.
And you can see, I'm a bit bitter because I didn't even buy any PAs. So but they've done a fantastic job. But unfortunately, in our process, that doesn't stack up. So we've got a great pool to fish in, but again, we've just got to be true to word and stick to our process. And the X50 fund's done very well. I think in 10 or up to 12 months, we've returned, I think, 27 or 28%, I think.
Wow.
In just good quality, sensible, founder-led businesses.
So with BKI, we were talking about the strategy being some growth, but a lot of like focus on income and for those self-funded retirees and stuff like that. Is that the same with the X50?
It is. Yeah. And again, the yield, headline yield's not as good. It's not the 4.5%, 5%. It's more like 3.2%, 3.3%. Which is a lot lower, but the growth is a lot higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which would be, you would expect if you start excluding the big four banks and the big retailers and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's you know, we've sort of covered the space for many years anyway, but it's exciting to have them in the one portfolio and have a meaningful position in a ResMed, for example, a bit more of a holding in TPG, you know, both founder-led businesses, ARB, Reece, as we, you know, it's the same sort of stocks, but just good quality, sensible positions.
When will Afterpay get a look in?
Well, from an alpha point of view, it ripped through the index.
Yeah.
It's gone into the 100.
Yeah.
So it's not in the X50. It's gone into the 50. I think it's in the 20 now.
Yeah, it is.
So
it was. I don't know. It's fallen off a bit lately.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's not in the crosshairs anymore.
Yeah. I mean, given we've touched on Afterpay a little bit, you did write a blog post talking about Afterpay and I guess why you were okay with missing Afterpay. Do you want to share some of the insights?
Yeah, that's a great article. Will wrote that and he did a fantastic job in doing so. And I think when you break it down and just write about not just, it could have been any stock, but what we avoided by sticking to our process, we've got to be sensible. You know, people give us money to manage for them. You know, they might be a pensioner. They might give us a percentage of their life savings, and we are not going to invest in something that we understand that may not be here tomorrow, that may do very well one day, but may not make it over the next 5-7 years. So, you know, that whole being sensible is sort of ingrained in us, and we're just not going to risk chasing alpha for 5 minutes to try and tick a box of, yeah, you performed well this year, because anyone that's performed 50% in the last year, I can guarantee they'd be hard-pressed to do it again next year.
Mm. I think like a key theme that's coming out of this conversation is like long-term patient capital, and, you know, that's a real strong point, and I guess that comes from the roots of Souls being around for so long and stuff like that. But at the same time, you are a fund manager, and I guess, you know, you have to tell your clients how you're going quarterly, yearly, all that stuff. How do you balance the constant need from the people you're managing, the money that you're managing, to know how you're going, how they've performed this quarter, with that like long-term patient disciplined approach?
Yeah. It's something we have juggled with, but I think what's happened with us managing at an LIC first has been really good when we go into the active fund space. So BKI being listed, you've got all these ASX rules, obviously, you know, full transparency, good corporate governance, et cetera, et cetera. So we give our shareholders and the market the whole portfolio twice a year. Now, most active guys will give you the top 5 or 10 and put it in alphabetical order. So you don't actually know what they're managing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. They've got a lot of IP and all the rest of it. I understand that. But what we found at BKI and going into the X50 product is, let's be transparent. Let's show people what we do. Let's tell people what we do. And let's not be afraid of doing that. We've even done an extra step with BKI. Traditionally, we do a monthly NTA. Now we're doing a weekly NTA to try and update the market, and hopefully some of the other traditional LICs will follow. But that's sort of closing a gap a little bit.
Will you ever get to, you know, the ETF style, just like constantly reporting your NTA?
We've got the modelling to do it. Whether a shareholder who's in pension mode really cares about it, probably not.
Yeah, that's fair.
But just taking that transparency into the X50 fund, we show typically our top 10 or top 20 stocks percentage. We'll talk about them. We'll just be open and honest and transparent.
Mm. So just briefly on the X50 before we move to sort of current times, the fees on the X50, 0.6 management and 15% performance, whereas BKI and Sol both 0.1 as we've spoken about, and also zero performance. Why the difference?
It's obviously more of an active portfolio. Last 12 months is not a great example, but we are going to have to be very active. We have to go out and visit these companies quite regularly, more so than we do at BKI. But if you look at that 60 basis points, most of the industry in an X50 product or X20 product charge you between 1 and 1.2%. So it's half the market. And we are actually looking at restructuring that performance fee and actually getting rid of it.
All right.
Wow.
Next time you go out, bring us along. We'll record it. Love to.
Yeah, sure. We'll do that.
We'll love to be there.
Sidewalk.
So, Tom, we want to get a couple of thoughts on, you know, the market today and some companies that you're looking at. But before we do that, we're just going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. So, Tom, you know, we've talked about the different funds that you run at Contact. I'm sure between all of the different funds, you've got great coverage of the ASX. So we want to pick your brains a little bit on that. What are some of, let's start here. What are some of the companies at the top of your watch list at the moment in Australia?
From a large cap point of view, we think Transurban's probably good value at the moment. Why do we say that? Interest rates are very low. Every time a line of debt for them comes up, they're striking that at a significantly cheaper rate than they were when it was struck 5, 7, 10 years ago. So that's great. I think the average interest now is about 4%. We can see that going quite a lot lower than that in the next couple of years. Assets that they've delivered are opening. You know, NorthConnex, part of the WestConnex program, is open and doing very, very well. That NorthConnex tunnel, there's 5,000 or 6,000 trucks from day one on that toll road. It's on a truck multiplier of three times. So three times more than the car. I think it's like $27 a trip, for example.
True.
And their rates, their tolls.
That means it's $9 for a car, which is just, it's crazy.
But if you want to sit on Pennant Hills Road and waste 45 minutes, you can, it's still there. You knock yourself out.
True.
And, you know, their tolls are CPI adjusted. So as we're seeing now inflation come through, these toll roads are going to go up. As we see people moving around more, and we saw the traffic numbers in Sydney increase, Melbourne's still got to come, but the traffic numbers are going to go very well, we think. They've got a great network in Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney in particular. They've got some other stuff out overseas, which is good, but we think at current market prices, it's a really good opportunity.
2021 might be the sweet spot for Transurban, where everyone's going back to work, but no one wants to go on public transport. And so
and they talked about that.
Let's get in the car.
They talked about that recently. It's a huge trend.
Yep. Where do you sit on the inflation debate at the moment? Where are you sort of calculating that into your models?
It's a great question and one we're debating constantly. I think if you step back and start with like general interest rates, they'll be soft and low for a while. So put that to aside. They've sort of told us that.
Yeah.
How much money they put into the market to buy bonds back is probably the bigger question. And we think they'll have to do that. That's probably the only way they can keep any sort of lid on currency at the moment. So that may get a bit of support and a bit of, you know, QE. But any inflation from what we've seen in the last 12 months is obviously positive.
Yeah.
Is that having a direct impact on housing? I don't think so. My view is on housing is there's so much pent up demand that's happened for many, many years, and a lot of people have rented and a lot of people actually now want to buy their own home. Rates are low. It's a really big draw card, and I think that's probably why house prices are going up, because your whole just basic supply-demand dynamics, not not working properly.
Yeah.
How do you think about, I guess, the bottom-up approach of, you know, analysing companies and their management and stuff like that, and then the top-down macro stuff? Like, how much does the macro stuff fit into your investing process?
It does quite a lot, and I think, especially in a new position, you have to have a bit of a top-down view before you sort of meet in the middle on that last step five valuation criteria. But it's something we're spending a bit more time on the top down than we ever used to.
Because it just feels like, I mean, everything is at all-time highs. Like, name an asset class that hasn't hit all-time highs in the last 12 months, from baseball cards and Pokemon cards to Bitcoin to property to stocks to everything.
Gold
hit an all-time high 2020. Yeah, it's just, it's a crazy environment. It's like there hasn't been any inflation in the real economy, but asset prices have just been inflated to nothing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, if you talk to the older guys around the Souls arena and BKI arena, they're comfortable now, but they are worried about what will happen or may happen in 2 or 3 years' time. Because everything won't be at record highs forever at once.
Yeah. Make sure you give us a call.
You're on the speed dial.
So, Tom, we are holding I wouldn't say competition, but all of our fund managers who come on this year are, whether they like it or not, put forward as a nominee for Fund Manager of the Year, FNUD.
F-U-N.
F-U-N apostrophe D. Lucky I'm not in a spelling competition. And it's just something that our community will sort of vote on and towards the end of the year based on the interview and all that sort of stuff. But the question
and,
that we
and
like...
And hopefully we have a big gala dinner at some point where we can invite everyone. Talking. And
To go towards the nomination, we always like to ask if you could put forward one stock, trend or industry that you think we should be keeping an eye on this year. I know it's very short term.
Wow.
I know it's very short.
Yeah.
I know it's short term focused, and the result of what you put forward, how it performs, is not going to go towards the benefit. But it's just sort of like
we're making this up on the fly. Yeah.
My answer might reflect that as well. Actually,
Stock trend or industry?
Stock trend industry. Okay, yeah. So another stock for, you know, I spoke about Transurban from a large cap. So from a mid and small cap, we still like Harvey Norman.
Okay.
So stock tick, great alignment, probably the best retailers in the whole market. Industry, online is still such a small part of Australian retail sales. And what we're seeing through the Brickworks Goodman JV, what they've built over the last 10, 15, 20 years and what they will continue to build over that time is amazing growth in distribution centres and you know, supported by obviously online and e-retail. Harvey Norman have got a long way to go there, which is great. So they've hit record profits, record share prices without really tapping into that market yet. So that's a bit of a tick as well. But the industry is probably not retail, it's property.
Okay.
Their property book is enormous. It underpins most of the share price at current value.
Really?
And, you know, just because it's a big box Harvey Norman site doesn't mean it's a big box Harvey Norman site forever. So, you know, look up. There's airspace. There's urban renewal happening around a lot of these facilities, and it might not be a retail asset for much longer in the next sort of 10, 15 years.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
Interesting. Yeah. So Harvey Norman own most of their
a lot of them. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's good. We'll make a note of that.
Yep.
The Harvey Norman, not a company that I really think of a lot, but I'll have to do some research into it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Tom, we want to say massive thank you for coming on and giving us some of your time. We do like to end these interviews with same final three questions. But before we do, if people want to find out more about Contact or follow you on social media, is there anywhere in particular they show?
Yeah, sure. So the best way to follow us is contactam.com.au. From there, you can link back to the Souls website and the BKI website, but that's probably the best point of call.
Yeah.
And a reminder that the BKI LIC ticker is BKI,
yeah.
And then also Soul ASX is SOL.
Nice.
So go check them out.
And I think Bryce has been a shareholder for 18 years. I think he's
thinking about that.
I think he deserves
interview.
A shout out in some way in the next BKI newsletter.
Do you get a pin if you hit? Do you get
we'll
a pin
get you
if
a
you
pin.
Hit 20?
Yeah,
we've got a slide in our pack. Bryce, that we do the do nothing slide, we call it. If you've invested from day one and participated in all the DRPs and placements and entitlement offers that we've done, you know, that $1 is worth, I think, now $4.60 for doing nothing. Can so, you know, we'll put a slide. Mugshot of you nice. In, on the slide going forward and say, you know, the Bryce slide or something we call it.
I feel like it should be the whole Leskie family. I think you guys would all be
I don't know if Dad's too old. Yeah. Maybe, probably. Yeah. He was the one who got us on. But anyway, let's...
There we go, anyway.
But thanks for having me, gents. It's been a great interview.
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you very much.
Great.
Good
it's
on
been,
you.
Good to chat.
Thanks.
So final three questions. You're not done yet.
Could I get away with it?
No.
First one is, do you have any books that you consider must read? And these can be investing or otherwise.
Yeah, I actually unfortunately don't have a lot of time to read outside of work stuff. You know, obviously reading a lot of, you know, the stuff from the team and research papers and then board papers and that sort of thing. To be honest, the last thing I feel like doing some weekends is sitting down reading a book. I'd rather spend time with my wife and the kids, to be honest. But one book that has always stuck with me is a book called Endurance, which is a story of Shackleton's adventure. Oh, yeah. And that's just amazing. And I think in these times where it's all pretty easy for a lot of us, you know, going back and reading those sort of stories is quite amazing.
Nice one. Second question. Now, this is a bit of a controversial one that we're trying this year, but I think it's working so far. In 60 seconds or less, what's the best company you've ever seen?
Oh, we've been talking about it all day.
Sol
Patterson. Sol's.
It's the second oldest company on the market. It's been around for forever. It's never missed paying a dividend.
That was a softball.
Yeah, I know. But you did get under 60 seconds, so well done. And then finally, you know, if you think back to your early days, you know, when you got your first Sol share, what advice would you give your younger self?
That's a really good question. We had the pleasure, we've been to the Berkshire Hathaway meeting quite a few times. Peter Kaufman, who wrote Poor Charlie's Almanac, we were fortunate to have a quite intimate dinner with him and probably only three or four other people one year. And Dad actually asked him, you know, what advice would you give these young guys around the table? And Will was there as well. And he basically said, don't get destination anxiety. Don't wish you were somewhere before you actually get there. Work hard, put in the hours, do your job, and you'll get there eventually. So, you know, I think in business in particular, people want to become the CEO very quickly. People want to become the CIO. People want to become a portfolio manager overnight. Doesn't happen like that. You got to put the hard word in. You got to get experience. You've got to get a few battle scars, and then once you've done that, you'll become it. But don't try and get there before your time's before your time's
due. I like that.
I haven't heard that destination anxiety before, but it's good.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. It's stuck with us. We use it a lot. Mm. Yeah.
Well, Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. We've covered a lot of ground and, you know, we appreciate you sharing your story and, you know, how you've built these businesses. So appreciate it. For our listeners, if you do want more info, Tom's given the contact details, but we'll put it in our show notes as well. So best of luck down at the challenge on the weekend.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. A lot of fun. Good on you. Thank
you.
No
worries.
Yeah, thanks.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.